anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram. And Jumping Pud Pod on Twitter. And if you want to support our podcast, please check out our Ko-fi. Hi, I'm Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Tor and Ash.
Hey!
Hi!
Shepard finds himself sucked into a time dilation field, where time passes more rapidly, and with no way to contact his team, Atlantis must scramble to save him.
Dun dun dun! Dun, 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 dun,
dun. Will we ever get one that sounds good?
No.
No.
Yeah. We're gonna try, though.
Wow, where do we even begin with this episode of... So many things happening at one time.
Can I just up front, do you like this episode?
Oh, it's so strange because I feel like people really like or really don't like this episode. And I really like it despite all of its flaws. I don't know if it's just because of like the potential that it had. Or if it's for the actual episode itself, but, yeah, that's how I feel. How about you guys?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. Because I feel like if you asked me before, literally, this episode, I'd be like, yeah, I love this episode. Like, what are you talking about? Like, John's so emotional. Are you kidding me? I love it. And then I think rewatching it was sort of like this, you know, critical thinking brain turned on. And, like, analyzing every scene, I was like, I have some issues here. I feel like I'm kind of in the middle. I feel like I like it for what it is, but I want it to be more. I wanted it to be something different.
I think, I don't know, I think it's a fine episode. I'm also in the middle. I don't really have strong feelings about it. I think it's kind of funny sometimes. And so I was enjoying myself when I watched it. But yeah, I was very curious what you two have to say about it. Because I figured that you would have more to say about this episode in particular.
It is a Shepard-centric episode. So, you know how we love to psychoanalyze our boy, and boy, did he give us a lot of fodder in this one.
This is basically just going to be a therapy session of John Shepard from three non-therapists.
Yeah, I feel like the title of the episode shouldn't have been Epiphany. It should have been John Shepard Has Issues. Capital I.
Yeah. Don't forget the little TM, the trademark.
So one thing I noticed, it's been clear, I think, throughout the show already, but, like, John has no self-preservation instinct.
No.
There was an invisible monster, and he just ran straight through it. Then was knocked out, and he got up and ran at it again. And every time he goes in not knowing what happened the last time and how he survived, basically, he's just...
And it's funny because I feel like in this episode, Shepard was trying to take sort of the moral high ground with these people who were trying to ascend and was saying, like, you know, you have to live life. You have to have experiences. You can't be so afraid to experience things. But, like... He is on the way opposite end of the spectrum and not even, like, acting like a normal person. Like, these people have fear, and that's normal, and you don't at all.
Like, all the stuff he was saying was just, like, take your own advice. What the fuck? Okay, it reminds me of this is gonna be so like online, especially because I'm the only one of us that has TikTok and you guys don't. but there's a TikTok sound that's like kind of trending around this moment. It's like never give up. And I feel like that was just John this episode. That's his whole motto. It's like never give up. What? Never give up.
Running with his knife towards an invisible giant. Never give up.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I wonder like if the writers know how funny it is, like how ironic it is, right, for like John Shepherd to be saying half that stuff.
Well, yeah, I kind of wonder like if it was intentional, like was he supposed to really be like coming from the moral high ground, or are we supposed to be thinking like, okay, he's a little extreme, but yes, these people do need to learn like to live life instead of just reading about it like and meditating on it. Because, like, he's not wrong in his philosophy, but, like, he is way too much the extreme in the other direction, at least in our humble opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I feel like they might not have known what exactly they did. I feel like they were being serious about him being, like, the one, and again, the chosen one, and to, like, lead these people to enlightenment or whatever, which is extremely ironic. Why John?
Well, I just find it funny because I feel like they were setting him up the entire episode. Like, even in the beginning, when they first encounter the time dilation field and they don't know what it is, Rodney's like, any volunteers? And he looks right at John. And John's like, yeah. Like, he doesn't argue, he's not like, oh, me again. Like, no, he's just like, yeah, okay, let me just stick my hand in there, like, no problem. So, it's kind of like, even before all of the events were set into motion, like, he was trying to prove a point to the people, he's already behaving and in a certain living without fear, living on the edge way. In the extreme.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of funny because it really just, again, we talk about this every episode, we're so fucking annoying, but it really just encapsulates, like, the whole war criminal, like, preachy, you know, like, very, like, American mentality, in a sense, you know, of, like, sort of, like, thinking, like, okay, I'm American, so I can say this, but sometimes, like, we do think sometimes we're, like, the center of the universe at times, and so, like, it's very, like, that sort of, like, you see, like, another culture. Again, I'm not saying all Americans. Like, now this is just, like, a sorry thing. But, like, you know, they see another culture and they sort of, like, just immediately feel like they have, like, they're better or, like, have to, like, show them the way. And it was kind of, like, it's a little bit like, oh, John, like, you shouldn't be talking. Actually, like, your advice is, like, yes, like, I get, like, where you're coming from, but, like, if this is how they want to live, like, you know, to each of their own, and I don't know, I think it kind of just shows, like, the problems that we occasionally bring up with Atlantis and how very, like, headstrong in their ways they are and how very much, like, they believe that they are, like, the saviors and, like, the ones who are, like, saving the Pegasus Galaxy.
I was gonna agree with you in saying I feel like John's need to control everything is also a very prevalent aspect of this episode. Like, he very much, when he's like waiting for them to come and rescue him, has ants in his pants. And, I mean, I know he's waiting a long time, but I think he even says a line like, I'm going to give you guys time to figure this out. Like, he needs to, like, state that out loud so that he actually gives them a minute to try and rescue him. And then, when it's not happening fast enough, he makes his own way. Like, if he had just waited in the cave for a second longer, Taylor's message would have come through. And he would have seen that, okay, you're stuck in a time dilation field, we're gonna come and get you, yada, 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 we're gonna keep sending supplies, don't move, but instead he goes and moves, so Yeah, I just feel like his whole, like, trying to tell those people how to live thing and, like, him trying to launch his own rescue and getting frustrated when it's not happening on his timeline is a very, like, control thing. He needs to be in control all the time.
Yeah. I mean, his control issues are infamous. I mean, look no further than season one and how every general was telling Elizabeth, like, don't take John. He cannot handle, like, taking orders and, like, not being in control of his own destiny. And even in Hot Zone, right? We get that, in, you know, iconic scene of him disobeying Elizabeth directly. And when they have a talk about it, he's just like, well, like, no, I did what I thought was best. And she goes, like, do you trust me? Like, you have to trust me. That's the thing. It's like, he just doesn't trust anyone else. And we see that quite literally on display here.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was actually shocked at, like, how fast he circled the drain in terms of believing that they just left him there to die. Like, I was... my mouth was open. Like, I forgot the impact of this episode. Just the fact that he would really believe that his team, Ronan, Taela, and Rodney, would leave him to starve in a cave in the dark by himself after all the things they've been through together and all the things that he has done for them and that they've done for him in the past. Like, I feel like just in Aurora... In the face of all this evidence, like, he still has a hard time believing in other people, trusting other people, believing that he's cared for, despite caring so much and admitting to caring so much to his friends this episode, which I was shocked, again, that he even said that out loud.
Yeah, it broke my heart a little when he said a thing about, yeah, I have people... First of all, he referred to Atlantis as home, which I always love when they do that. It's like, yes, Atlantis is home. And then, yeah, there are people back home that I care for and they care for me. And he, so he... I guess he knows on some level that they care, but then he says, yeah, or at least I thought they cared about me. I was like, John, you idiot! I mean, he's just, I guess he's just broken, like, very deeply traumatized. But yeah, when he said that, I was like, wow, there's so much going on in his little head. And so much, yeah, I don't want to say going wrong, but... like, he's clearly not thinking, like, straight. Oh, maybe he is, but, like, his vision is kind of, like, his, yeah, it's kind of warped, so he just doesn't see that, or doesn't allow himself to believe that people care for him.
Yeah, yeah. And, going back to the beginning part, yeah, when he says, like, very early on, he's like, we don't leave people behind. Again, he's like, it's only been like, what, like maybe like a day or two, and he's already like, we don't leave people behind, right? Like, he's already like literally losing it. And then one of my favorite little bits of him literally going crazy is when he starts talking to him about himself in the third person. He's like, when he shoots the cave door and he's like, good thinking, John, shoot yourself. Like, oh, baby girl. Oh, he was gone. He was already, like, panic had fully set in. Rational thought was out the window. You know, he was already talking to himself like that. I was like, oh, no. Like, no wonder, like, by the end of it, he could sort of, like, finally admit, you know, to, like, the Atlantis team, you know, like, oh, like, you guys do care about me. Or, like, oh, let's go home kind of thing. It's because he'd been there for 6 months and he had already lost it on, like, day three. Like, he had already just sunk so low up at that point. Like, the only way to climb up was, you know, to go up. So, yeah, that was just really funny and also really sad.
Yeah, what I found astounding is that his first instinct, not his first instinct, but when he tried to, like, first he tried to punch the wall, like, the doorway, why didn't you just try to touch it first? Like you did, like, or maybe throw a stone like you did when it was, when you were still on the outside. But no, his mind didn't go there. And also, so his instinct was to shoot it. Great. Perfect. Always a good idea, yeah. But also, there was such a funny cut, I thought, or it was like a funny, like, dichotomy, I guess, that John was trying to shoot at the doorway, and on the other side, there's Rodney, who's holding in the flowers. He's on one side. John was shooting, and on the other side, Rodney was with the flowers. I thought it was kind of funny. I don't know why, but I was like, okay, guns and flowers.
The differences in logic. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of liked how it spoke to, like, the deep-seated anger and sort of, like, this weird... Like, the fact that he got angry so fast was really shocking because I feel like on the surface he plays it cool a lot of the time and, like, things don't bother me, you know? And he's very glib and he makes jokes and whatever. But, like, this is something that clearly is very a sensitive topic to him. We know about his past, his military history, and why he was treated like such a pariah by the military is because he always would risk life and limb and heart to go and rescue friends when that was not the mission. And so I think being put in the vulnerable position, I don't know, he just doesn't have the capacity to believe that anybody would reciprocate or, like, do the same for him. And I just feel like that is so really sad and devastating and terrible. And I just think you were speaking about the dichotomy between, you know, John shooting and Rodney using the flower. And I feel like there was a huge dichotomy at the whole beginning of the episode of, like, Shepard thinking that they had abandoned him, and then the team on the other side completely losing their minds and, like, trying to do math and, like, figure out, like, what the hell was going on and, like, trying to get a plan and, like, being so fast and, like, being so worried while being so effective at the same time. It was, like, crazy. It just makes the viewer feel like John is so blind to not see how much they care about him, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because it goes back to the, you know, the main sort of point is that John is his, like, his own worst enemy, right? Because, like, imagine, right? Like, even if he saw, like, a video of, you know, like, the team, like, going crazy or, like, the team telling him, like, oh, yeah, like, we tried to rescue you, I don't know if it would have made a difference. Like, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, do you think it would have made a difference if he, like, really saw how crazy the team was going for him? Or, like, would he have changed after this? You know, I don't know.
It's complicated because I feel like Shepard is always in a position where even when he is, like, captured or, like, needs help from the team, he always kind of, there's an aspect of him that has to rescue himself. And so I feel like even if he knew that they were freaking out on the other side and, like, trying to help him, I still feel like he would feel, like, responsible for his own rescue. I think Weir even makes a comment when Rodney is talking about the situation to her where she's like, well, why doesn't Shepard just get himself out? Because she doesn't know, like, what's happening exactly. And then Rodney's like, how can he get himself out? And, like, he would have done it by now. So, like, this idea that even the team themselves kind of are like, oh, like, John always figures it out sort of thing. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
Everyone thinks he's the Rock, but he's not. He's clay, bitch. He's moldable, you know, breakable clay.
Yeah, I was, I agree with you, Tor. I definitely think that this, even if he saw what the team was doing, I think he wouldn't see there. I feel like there was anger on both sides because they were so stressed out that they were so snapping at each other well because they were just freaking out. And I feel like he wouldn't see that. He would only see, oh, they're not getting me out. So he would try to, yeah, definitely. Probably it wouldn't have changed anything. I feel like he would, if he saw them just like running around and going crazy, he would still leave and he would still see the monster and be attacked and end up in the village, I feel like.
Yeah. I want to raise a question to you guys because I was just thinking about it while we were talking. So this is such like a unique episode of Stargate Atlantis, right, where it really focuses on like John's insecurities and his emotions. And I think, again, because we have seen the show already, you know, multiple times, like, we know his backstory, we've, like, psychoanalyzed him to death. But I was thinking, I'm like, do you think this episode would have worked better if it took place maybe in season 3 or season 4? Like, maybe, like, Phantoms, what is it, Phantoms or Whispers, whatever that episode is? Phantoms,
it. I
think. Yeah, okay, yeah. What if Phantoms was in this season? So this episode was Phantoms. And then season 3 was this episode. Like, do you think having the background of Shepard, right, and his whole, like, military thing would have worked better? Because I do think, thinking about it, I'm like, this might be so, like, strange for people who haven't, or, like, who don't know his backstory. Like, watching this, you're like, oh, like, why is he like this? Or, like, why is he doing this? And I feel like we understand more because, again, we know about his military. And also we learn stuff about his father and his previous relationship in season 4. So I'm thinking, I'm like, would this have, like, hit harder if it was season 5, John, doing this? Or, like, you know, again, season 3 or season 4? What do you guys think, though?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I feel like, yeah, because you don't know why he's so upset. You're kind of, it's almost comical when, I feel like when you first watch it, because he's just like, seems out of proportionately frustrated. I mean, of course he's waiting there for like weeks while they're wasting time on the other side, but like, we just have never seen him get into that emotional state before. So it's kind of like jarring. And to not know where this response is coming from is, I guess it's not as impactful. Like, I feel like Epiphany, you're so right. Epiphany is more of a impactful watch and more of a John character study when watching it after you finish the series than in order. Because I feel like you mentioned if this episode was in season 5, and I feel like if it was in season 5, it would be even crazier because I feel like he's even more outcast in the 5th season where, you know, everyone has, like, a significant other and he's still the single guy. And so he's even more, like, even in that respect, he's alone because, yeah, like, he might feel an extra layer of isolation in that sense. I'm like, oh, I'm not necessary because they have other people. So yeah, that would have been crazy. The impact this would have had later seasons. Damn.
I don't know. I feel like season 5 is like everyone is depressed, right?
Yeah.
Including the viewers.
True.
I feel like it still has an impact now. I am not sure if the impact would have been bigger if it had been in season 5. Because I feel like maybe it would be cool in season 3 because I feel like then the team is really like, it's the team and they love each other and care about each other. And they're the team. That's them. That's the 4 of them. And they are very tight. And so I feel like I like this idea of him feeling instantly like they have given up on him. I feel like it's even more interesting having it this episode at a place when it's just a team and without the significant others of the other team, because it's a team and he still feels like he doesn't belong, you know? So if he's already an outcast, then him feeling like an outcast and him feeling left behind is like not that far of a reach. But knowing that they all care about them, maybe after the return, is it in the return where he's under Daedalus talking to Taylor and he's like, yeah, you know, I don't have a lot of, and he's trying to talk about his feelings, but doesn't really manage. And Taylor is kind of filling in. And there's this one scene where she's like, yeah, I don't have many. And she says, friends. And he's like, no, I have friends. I kept That's thinking Tito. Of that.
Tito.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in Tito. Yeah. Because that's when you get they're on the way to get Ronin, I think, right?
Oh, okay. It's possible, yeah. Okay, but it's still season 3, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So I kept thinking of that scene for some reason. Yeah, not for some reason, because it's also like him kind of trying to talk about his feelings. So yeah, I feel like season 3 would be a good fit for this episode. I don't know when we learn all his background stuff. Also right. Season 3.
Three and I four kind of like family? Four is like his family. Yeah.
Yeah. And but like three is like with his military path, right? So I feel like after that might be a better fit than season 4 or 5.
Yeah.
That's true. And also, you know, I guess it's kind of nice in a way because it gives us a glimpse behind the curtain. I guess if you thought of him as sort of surface level before now, you kind of get this hint. It would kind of be like a slow peeling back of the layers. So yeah, that's true. It is it could be impactful as well in this order.
Now, it's such a random question to bring up, but I think my thought process was because, I don't know, this is such a weird season, right? I feel like we're like discovering so much we liked and like don't like about this season. And it just feels kind of weird because at this point, right, we've not really had, like, character-based episodes, right? Like, I think we talked about this, like, most of them have been, like, team-focused, or, like, there'll be, like, a plot A, a plot B, and a plot, like, C, kind of, right? Like, even in Trinity, when John and Rodney were doing this whole, like, you know, blowing up planet thing, like, we still had, like, the little side mission of Ronan and Taylor. And so it kind of feels, I don't know, like, this episode, I guess, was maybe, like, jarring? Bit to go from like all of these like maybe like larger stories to just be focused down on one, and I just have problems with the story in general. That's like another thing. So I just feel like I honestly think Phantoms would have fit so much better here, because I think in season 3 that's when they brought back, you know, the whole like character base, because then in season 3 we have the real world with Elizabeth, and then we have Tower of Rodney. Right, I think as well. So we have like more of, they brought those episodes back, which are great. But I guess for me, maybe I'm just being crazy, but I don't know. I just felt like it kind of came out of nowhere, this episode. And I'm just not sure if it was maybe earned. Yeah.
I kept, sorry, is this a side note? I kept mixing up Phantoms with another episode. I was like, is that a John-focused episode? But now I remember what Phantoms is about. So.
Yeah, I mean, because yeah, that one's good too, because yeah, it's like, it is John, right? There is a lot of John, but there's also like team, right? We get a lot of like everyone else. And so it's kind of weird because I feel like this one would have fit perfectly in place of Epiphany, because it's after, you know, Ford's gone, and so it's after sort of like they've like really cemented this is the team. And so to have an episode where like the team are actually against each other, right, because this is where John is like, you know, thinking like Ronan's like, or I think he thinks Ronan is like something else, or I don't know, or he's like, he shoots Rodney, right? Like, they're like, you know, they're all divided, like they're all in their own world kind of thing. So I think it'd be nice to kind of have like a sort of, you know, they get broken down and they get put back together at the end.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, I think it would have been nice to have it after the Hive, because it would have been sort of again like a strengthening of their bond after they had kind of been broken apart the last few episodes anyways.
Yeah, I agree, actually.
Oh, I was just going to say, that brings me to the resolution of the episode. Because you were mentioning how in Phantoms, like, at the end, everyone's, like, joking and laughing, whatever. And, like, Taylor and John kind of come to this understanding, especially between them two. I feel like she gets a greater understanding of him after that. How do you feel about the resolution of this episode? Do you feel like... I mean, we don't always have to, like, explicitly talk about our feelings, but do we feel like there was any resolution to Shepherd's feelings at all in this episode?
That's a great question. All of our disgusted faces right now are like, yes and no, which is, like, not even an answer. But, like, yes and in a way that I feel like it suits the show we have in front of us. It doesn't suit our version. Our idealized version of the show, I think, right? I feel like it doesn't suit what we would have liked, but I feel like it's on brand for the show, which, if that makes any sense, or like, it's very on brand for them to be like, oh, we rescued you, and John's like, ha ha ha, and he's like, let's go home, and they're like, ha ha, okay, and then they walk off, and it's like, well, okay, I'm sure they had, like, important conversations, like, off screen. like, that's on brand, but I feel like, does it satisfy us personally? Maybe not. I'm trying to think of how they could have ended. I don't know. Maybe they could have had, like, a cute little, like a walk-off scene where they're, like, still talking or kind of being like, oh, like, we missed you. Or, like, something kind of funny, like, you know, like, Rodney wanted to fly down the jumper, or, like, Elizabeth wanted to fly the jumper in and, like, get torn apart, or something, like, silly they could have, like, mentioned as they're sort of, like, walking off screen. So they're, like, telling him, like, what he's missed, and they're like, we did this, and they're like, how about you, like, what's with the beard, or, like, you know, getting more in depth of, like, so what have you been doing for 6 months, like, have you been farming, like, just something, like, maybe a little more, or just a little more, like, camaraderie. I feel like they could have, I don't know, I feel like I wanted a little more from the team. Sort of kind of, like, reassure him, like, oh, hey, we have missed you, or, like, oh, hey, this happened, you know?
Yeah, the way the show ended was definitely very on brand. Oh, the way this episode ended with him being, like, him managing to say, yeah, I, like, in his, like, joking, like, cool way, yeah, I even missed you a little, and then Ronan making a joke, oh, it was only a few hours for us, and then Taylor being like, Ronan, of course you missed him, and we were worried and shit. So I feel like, you asked about resolution of John's feeling. I feel like in canon, no. I honestly think that that's it. That's all they get. Maybe there's later mention, or... like, maybe another one, oh yeah, we're glad you're back, or something, once they return. But, so, that's canon, I feel like, and there it makes sense. I liked the idea that Sam just proposed with them, just, like, telling him, oh yeah, we tried the probe, and, oh, Rodney used Selenka's idea or something. He's like, what? And just having... just them explaining what they did. And I mean, Elizabeth went off world, which she rarely does, and, like, translated this whole, like, keep out sign, not really, like, welcome sign. So, yeah, I feel like that would have been a nice ending for him. Just, like, I don't know if it would stick, that they care about him and they did not give up on him, even though he felt like they did. But maybe it would have, like, just, I don't know, sparked a flame or something with where he feels like, oh, okay, so they did care about me. They do care about me.
Yeah, I feel like I have complicated feelings about the end of the episode. Like, I feel like... it was so in character for John to be like, yeah, I missed you guys, but, like, jokingly. And then Ronan rescuing him from having a feeling by totally cheapening the moment. and also just being straight up honest and, like, you weren't gone for very long for us. I feel like the team did apologize for taking so long or for not being there sooner for him. And I just feel like it was very in character for Shepard to just brush it off and be like, I didn't feel a way about this. Like, it's fine. Like, yeah, whatever. It's cool. And then move on. And I guess it's important that there were no, like, grand declarations, because I feel like this sort of lays the groundwork for John's issues in the future as well, that do never get resolved. So for me, in a way, it was satisfying because I get a sick sort of pleasure in John being emotionally reticent and not healing from that at all. but, like, I could also... I would have also done with, like, a little bit more joshing and banter that you guys were suggesting at the end there.
But I want to talk. I want to switch a little... We're still going to be on John, though, because there's a lot to go into with him. I'm so sorry for all the people who don't love John listening to this, because this is a very John-heavy episode. But I was going to talk about the ancient aspect of this episode. There's so much to unpack, and a lot of it I don't like.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Like, okay, well, first, I guess we can kind of start with, like, the romance, quote-unquote romance part of this episode. I hated that. I feel like every time they tried to, like, it just didn't work. She was clearly very into him, and John could not give a rat's ass. He, like, even by the end of, like, the 6 months, like, it did not seem like he cared at all for this woman. Like, he did not care. Like, he was literally, like, constantly like, oh my god, yeah, my team's almost here, or like, oh my god, they sent me more food, right? And she's just like, stay. And he's like, they sent me a chocolate bar, like, you think I'm gonna stay here? Like, he was just not, it was like not registering for him that, like, she was really that into him, or like she wanted him to stay. And I think this is kind of what, like, started my biggest problem with this episode, is sort of like the teasing of John's ancient gene. And like, okay, this is like a whole other rant kind of thing, but like, right, okay, so going back to like episode one, right, there's such a huge like focus on John having such a strong ancient gene that can basically like do so much for them, and so of course they have to bring him along, blah blah blah, blah. And they just kind of like never deal with that ever again, you know, right? They never like, they don't bring it up very often. However, they bring it up here. Right? Kind of where, again, like, we get the whole he's the chosen one, where the ancient woman is telling him that he's the one that's going to lead her people to ascend. And it's just like, there's just so much of this chosen one, like, stuff. And again, I don't mind it. I think it's really fascinating. But they never, like, ever explain why him. Like, why him? Why does he have such an ancient gene? Like, powerful. Like, is it just relating to, like, his family? Like, is it, like, a descendant thing? Like, I have no idea. And it just drives me up the walls bananas. Because there's so much potential there. There's so much, like, cool idea of, like, why is John, like, the chosen one? And again, it's so fun when the chosen one is sort of, like, a reluctant hero. Where, like, he doesn't want to be the chosen one. But he is. And he somehow always manages to, like, fulfill, like, their chosen one, like, duties, right? Like, he didn't want to help them ascend, but, like, he did it accidentally just by criticizing them and being like, you guys need to grow a pair of balls. They were like, oh, shit, you're right. And so they did, right? But it's just, it's crazy that they don't ever address it. Like, why? Why do they care so much about him? And also, just kind of, okay, I'll say one last thing, and then you guys can take the floor, because I would be here all day if I start going about this. But one of the other things that just blew my mind, and I was like, are we just going to gloss over this and never talk about this again, is the ancient woman telling him that, like, she sees things, whatever, and she's been seeing John since he was a kid. What? Huh? She just drops that, and he's just like, yeah, okay. And they just, like, move past that. I have a million questions, and this episode doesn't care to bring it up. And I think it's just so frustrating because they have such a cool concept of, like, this chosen one, this, like, reluctant hero turned, like, you know, he was like thrown away from the military, but like he's so important in this galaxy. And they only bring it up when it's stupidly like plot relevant. Like they only bring it up just to be like, oh yeah, it's because he's the chosen one, whatever. And they never develop it. And it just, sorry, it drives me crazy. Someone else talk about this.
No, I agree. And I'm going to jump in and say, I feel like that whole idea that she was seeing him like as a child was probably to push the romance angle between the two of them, like to give them like a connection. I think her name is Tyr. Her name is Tyr, right? I don't know. Anyway, ancient woman number 3 or 2. I don't even remember which number it is. 2, okay. So, yeah. So, I feel like the writers shoved that in there to give them, like, a sense of deeper chemistry or connection. But I feel like it's so much more interesting as, like, a John plot point or, like, backstory thing instead of, like, a romance thing. I mean, that's just me, but, like, if it implies that if she was seeing him or seeing visions of him as a child, like other ancients, like other ascended beings must have an interest in him, because why would she be the only one to see him? Like, it doesn't make sense. So all the ancients who like share that power of like being able to like see visions must also see him. Because I'm assuming, like, from the lore that they unveiled in this episode, that certain, I don't know if all ancients can do all the things, or, like, only certain ancients that have ascended can do certain things, like, they can move shit with their mind. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, it would just be so much cooler if they actually, like you were saying, Sam, used it for plot in the future, used it for character development in the future, use it in different episodes, instead of it just being, like, a throwaway line in this one episode, and then never talked about again. Never brought up again.
I was gonna say, too, since you brought that up really quick, about the whole, like, other ancients have been watching him. It just goes so much deeper, too. Like, obviously I know, like, ancients can't, like, interfere, like, directly, but I wonder if they were doing shit, like, behind the scenes, and, like, you know, like, you know, it's like some sneaky shit. Like, you know, what's her name? What's that damn? Yes. She was always kind of pulling like some like under the table kind of sticky shit going on. So I'm like, who's like his patron up there that was just kind of like pulling the strings and been like, okay, like do this for John so he can get up here, so he can end here, so he can end up in the Pegasus Galaxy. And then we can cut this out. But I was going to say, random side note, I was like, you know what? Random little, like, headcanon that just came up to me. I was like, this is so, like, Percy Jackson coded of John Shepard. I was like, what if, hear me out, what if his mom was an ancient? But she had been around for a while. She had been around. She had been hiding. Maybe she hadn't, like, ascended. Or maybe she did ascend and then she came back. And then, because they were like, we need a chosen one. So she was like, got it. And she came down. And, like, this is so Percy Jackson, where, like, the gods would just, like, you know, have, like, a kid with, like, a mortal and then, like, fuck off. So, like, what if, like, she had John and then she, like, they were like, okay, you have, like, 5 years with him. And she was like, okay, cool. And then, like, she died. And then she's like, well, my job's done. And then he's yours, guys. And then that was it. I don't know.
I feel like that would make a lot of sense, because his gene is so strong, it would make sense that he has an ancient in his recent, like, one of his recent ancestors was an actual ancient, and yeah, maybe ascended and then descended. We know that they can do it, and yeah, I think that would be cool. But the real question is, if that's the case, if his mom is an ancient, why did she choose his dad?
Oh, sick burns.
Why did she want her son to suffer?
That is a good question. I know. Well, I was like, okay, there's two things. Well, one, I was like, okay, what if it was like his grandma or something, right? That'd be kind of fun too.
Oh, that's cool.
If it was like maybe like to kind of like retrofy or fix that kind of like thing. Or the second option could be a very Jesus route. And be like, it's because she needed him to suffer.
Oh my god.
I mean, listen, so he's very Jesus-coded. I feel like I've always been saying this. You can go on my old Twitter and you will see, like, Jesus and John Shepherd in the same tweet. I guarantee you. I have mentioned this before. Yes. Yes.
My mind went different places when you said, like, Jesus, like that he's Jesus, and that she was doing, like, I thought, oh, was she doing some Virgin Mary thing?
Immaculate Conception.
What?
There was no father. We don't need that.
Honestly, that would be kind of slay. That would be kind of so iconic of John just to have a mother. Sorry, I kind of love that. And then she just was like, maybe she just like gave him, you know what, that would be so interesting, because maybe that's why he like had such like issues with his dad, right? They were always beefing, they're always fighting, and he feels so different from the rest of his family, right? Like, he feels like such an outcast already from the beginning.
I think we just solved
very true
jumping puddles canon accepted.
Stamp that.
That was me slamming. I don't have a mallet, so I just slapped my knee, but like, canon.
Yeah, but the ancients, they, interesting folk. So first of all, I want to ask you, if you, like, we learned in this episode that some people who come close to ascension kind of develop these powers, like, some have, like, these visions, others can heal, others have, like, telekinesis or something. What would your, if you were to ascend and you had one of those powers, what would yours be? Or what would you want it to be?
I want to say telekinesis, because I feel like I'm lazy. And so if I could just, like, mind control things to come to me, then that would be awesome. And I would really enjoy that. How about you guys?
Well, I mean, I was just going to go easy. First thing that came to mind, teleportation.
Oh.
I want that so bad. Like, that's, like, the one power I'm, like, I could have it now and I'd be so chill. Just to be able to, like, transport all over the place in, like, a blink of an eye. And kind of, like, yeah, you disappear and you just show up. Yeah. Literally. Right? Like, oh, my God, that'd just be great. No planes, no fuss, no muss, no luggage. Just bleep in and out of existence. And I think that would be really useful if we were in the Pegasus Galaxy, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was also thinking teleportation. I don't know if the ancients can do that. Like, when they are ascended, for sure, because, like, they are just flying around the galaxy. But, I don't know. I hate cooking. Maybe I can have, like, like the power to just, like, make food appear or make food prepare itself and taste good.
Hell yeah.
That'd be amazing.
It would be.
Right?
But I do like how at least they did that. Like, they set up, like, people close to ascension having these powers, because then we see it again in Tau, so that's pretty cool. I like that.
I forgot about that. That's true. That's really cool.
Consistency. A.
For one.
Love it. 1 point for Stargate. 1 point. We're gonna take one away, like, very soon.
Oh no.
But they have 1 point for now.
Tentative point.
Yeah. There are some fun things about the ancients. But also, like, another thing that I noticed, they did not account, like, they are so self-centered. They did not account for, like, language barrier. Because, like, they had this warning, this welcome and warning, and just in ancient, I'm like, yeah, because everyone can read that. It's like, that's not the case. Not everyone speaks and reads ancient. Thank you very much. So your sign was shit.
And you know what else is kind of sick and twisted? The fact that, like, once you step into the time dilation field, like, you cannot change your mind. Like, the dude was, like, explaining it to Shepard and being, like, you chose to ascend, so, like, you cannot go back. And, like, no. Even if he did choose and was, like, I'm not feeling this. Like, you're, like, forcing people to, like, either live and die in this place or ascend. And it's kind of, like, evil, in my opinion. So, like...
Yes.
Yeah. It's very, like, what happened to free will? The main difference between the ancients and the Ori is that, you know, they are all like, oh, we give humans free will. Where? This episode proved that you guys don't. You guys don't let people leave. And then you also have been monitoring John since he was a kid. And who knows what y'all have done to force him or to get him here. Like, no. You guys are twisted. And we see that. We pick up on all the little things. And I'm just like, they're the villains.
Yeah. I feel like this episode just proves it. Even at the end there, where, like, Tyr was like, don't take the ZPM because this should be a sanctuary if anybody else wants to come here and, like, try to ascend. And, like, bitch, no one wants to ascend. Also, like, they need that ZPM to live. And third, like, why?
Okay, I don't really, like, I don't mind that, honestly, because I do, like, I don't like the ancients. I think they suck, unfortunately. Or they, like, yeah, maybe they were cool at some point, but, yeah, now they are just annoying. But, like, going back to SG-1, the ancients and ascensions, and ascension was kind of, like, a way out for some people.
True.
They have, and I just remember that, like, this term sanctuary, like, I know it's, like, it's a word, but it's also used in SG-1, and there is, I think maybe I'm mixing something up, but there's this one episode of, like, this monk and Daniel are just, like, trying to, like, and it's the first time they meet Omar, I think.
Oh, yeah!
And, so these places where people can go and kind of find refuge and ascend, because, like, I think this place in particular was for, Jafar, who didn't want to, like, who wanted to ascend. Mm. So there are people who, like, really find, who do want to ascend. Like, despite everything, maybe not all ancients suck, maybe just the ones we see, because, like, maybe they have the power or something.
Mm.
It went to their head.
But actually they are cool, maybe. So I don't really mind that they left the sanctuary open, but they might have, like, maybe you should have, like, they let them go again.
Yeah.
Like, the team. Maybe they should have left that and just, like, checking every now and then, and we're like, oh, we have people here, and a few of them don't want to ascend, so maybe we'll let them out again. So maybe they could have, like, changed the system a little bit, but just still keep this place as, like a safe space, I guess, for people who want to ascend or whatever.
Yeah. Just have a fucking back door. Just have, it's that simple. Just have a back door, let people choose, and then, like, you're proving, like, okay, you have free will. And then also, yeah, someone fucking translate that goddamn, like, sign. Because, girl, y'all have been dead for 10,000 years. I'm sure there are very few people that actually know how to read this damn sign. Plus, I was like, this isn't even, like, a widely known place. Like, we literally stumbled across it just because they were, like, out and about fucking around. So it's like, if you're gonna have, I guess... You know, I get they can't, like, super advertise it because obviously, like, the Wraith are around and stuff. But I'm like, do people know that this exists?
Okay, they find this door and it hasn't... There's a weird energy coming from it. And it is a sign next to it in ancient. And their first instinct is to go through. Have they not learned?
No. They learned nothing.
They even say, oh yeah, the ancients, they hide cool stuff behind a cloak. And it's like, yes, but there's so, like, we talked about them exploring Atlantis, or not exploring Atlantis in one of the last episodes, that all the things the ancients did and that we don't know about. So they find a random ancient doorway on a random planet, I don't think to like read the instructions.
Yeah, no, it's interesting too, because I mean, well, this can segue into another conversation, which I am happy to talk about. Fuck, shouldn't Rodney have like been able to read a few more words? Like, come on, is he not like fluent in at least like reading ancient, or at least like, I don't know, that seemed kind of funny to me that Taylor like could read a few words and then he didn't even look at it. He was like, yeah, whatever, and he was just focusing on the camera. I was like, you don't want to just go ahead and give it a try?
I don't know if they wanted to give her something extra to do in the episode, or like, because she had, she's like lived in the Pegasus Galaxy, so she must have like seen some ancient, or like maybe her own language was derived from ancient, like, I don't know. Maybe that's why. But yeah, I get what you mean, because I feel like Rodney working with the ancient technology would have to know ancient words, definitely.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sure they did it just to bring like Elizabeth, honestly, like on the team to give a, like. But I feel like they could have figured out another way, right? Like it could have been like Taylor and Ronan. Taylor and Rodney in the beginning, like just looking at the sign and like, you know, kind of, like, deciphering it, and then just being like, ah, fuck it, we kind of know enough, like, let's just go in. Like, it could have kept with, like, them just being careless about it, and Elizabeth could have just been like, no, I'm going, because, like, I want to, or, like, for John, or also just because she's obsessed with the ancients. Like, I could see her just being like, I'm gonna go, in case there is an ancient or something. Like, her just being like, I want to go see it. So, it was just a little funny if they did that, because I was like, you don't need to dumb down any of the characters, really.
Yeah, and even from a linguistic perspective, like, the sign could have said something that, like, was very, that seemed straightforward, but, like, if they had Elizabeth there, then she would have been like, oh, no, like, this is, like, an analogy for this, or this is a metaphor for this, and this actually means this, like, it's interpreted this way instead, because, like, Rodney functioning on, or Taylor functioning on their basic understanding of ancient would be like, oh, it means this, but then she would bring a higher understanding, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, yeah. Totally. Speaking of, really quick, let's talk about Taylor, because I'm actually very pleased with her in this episode. I think, you know, we've been really struggling to find any, like, bright spots this season. For Taylor, I feel like she's been kind of relegated to a background character where she just doesn't say much. But I think she really stepped up this episode. And I think she had a really, just really great scenes where, obviously in the beginning, they all don't really know what's going on. And Rodney's obviously quicker on the uptake and he's like freaking out and stuff. But we get that really fun scene where they're in the jumper. And they're like, what did it bring to John? And they're like rushing to get stuff. And I think Taylor asks a question, or maybe Rodney does. And she's just like, he's about to explain it. And she's like, don't. She's like, we need to hurry. Like, don't explain it. Like, I get it. And he's like, oh, okay. And she just runs out. And again, later on, when Rodney comes back and he's like, oh, how did you figure that out? And she's like, oh, well, like, I put my watch in. Or she like figured out how, like, what the time difference is. And Rodney's like, oh, okay, good work. Like, she was, like, almost as, like, his little assistant, kind of. Or, like, she was just, like, helping him out with, like, the science stuff. And I think it's another, just, like, obviously it's a small, these are small details that maybe people, I mean, I definitely didn't notice it the first time. But now I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Like, just kind of branching out.
Yeah, I was really obsessed with Taylor and Rodney's scenes. This episode too, I thought they were awesome. I just loved how, like, the trust, the inherent trust was there. Like, in the beginning, she was kind of like, what? But then, as soon as he was, like, freaking out and being like, you just have to listen to me and, like, do what I say. She was already, like, on board. She was like, okay, I will do what you say. We'll figure this out. And then when he came back, that trust was sort of reversed, where she was like, this is the time difference, I figured it out by doing this. And then he was like, oh, like, surprised. And she was like, oh, do you want to check my work, or like, do it, want me to do it again to show you? And he was like, no. Like, I liked that, like the trust, like, he trusted her to have done it and done it right the first time, and like, he didn't have to check, which is crazy, he didn't have to check her math or anything. Like, he was just like, yep, let's go. Like, wow. I was like, oh yes, finally.
Yeah, I wrote down actually, this is a John episode, but I almost feel like it's also a Rodney episode.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, you know, they have, you know, they're separate plots, they're separate things going on, but they still have, like, these very important scenes.
I also love the fact that Rodney invented the selfie stick in this episode.
Oh my gosh. Wait.
Also, like, just the even the John Rodney banter in the episode, like, when Rodney was saying, why do you always have to park so far away, like, referring to the jumper and John always parking far from their destination, I was like, why do you sound like my parents right now? Like, this is a conversation I hear in the car constantly.
Oh, yeah. Actually, there was a lot of, again, like, just great mix-up moments. Of course, the iconic Rodney being hella jealous at the end when they save John. And John's having this little moment with the Ancient, and he's like, again? He's like, oh my gosh, like, he's so... That's the first thing he says, or, like, one of the first few things he says to John. And, like, your jealousy is showing. Calm down. Rein it in, sir. Rein it in.
Oh, yeah. I also wanted to ask you guys how you felt about the scene where Rodney is getting kind of frustrated about being asked a million questions when he returns to Atlantis. And he refers to Ronan and Teyla as Conan and Xena. How do we feel about that scene?
Okay, so the McShep part of me loves that Rodney is so hell-bent on saving John that he's basically, like, saying, fuck the world, fuck everyone else, I have to go for John. The McShep part of me, okay. The team-loving, character-appreciating podcast me does not love that. And I sort of think, do we think Rodney, at this moment in the story, would say that? Or I was like, is it just another character regression? I'm not sure.
I feel like it's tough. It's so tough. Because he's so angry and frustrated. So I feel like it kind of just makes sense to me that he would say that. Because at this point, time is money. And also, I just feel like a part of me... I had gift this on Tumblr. Let me preface this by saying I had gift this scene because I wanted to get, like, public opinion on how they felt about it. And, like, it was very hot and cold. Like, some people were like, oh, this was so funny. Other people were like, oh, he was so angry. Some people were like, oh, I really dislike Rodney for this comment and comments like these. And for me, I just feel like it was understandable for him to say that in the moment. Like, he was really frustrated. I think it was coming off of Elizabeth's comment. Like, she mentions, like, oh, do we even know if John's still alive? And, like, why don't we think that he'll just walk back through the portal himself? So I feel like this was a sort of Rodney's internal feelings of not measuring up kind of being reflected outward in a destructive way. Like, I think Rodney resents the idea that Shepard or any one of them is sort of indestructible and can walk away from anything unscathed, just because he's done it so many times. And I think they all take that for granted, Rodney included. So I just think the mean girl jumped out. And the moment... because of that, not that it's an excuse, but, like, I understand why it happened. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think it is interesting, too, because we do get, like, I think he explains it in that scene or maybe the next scene, why he's so, I mean, obviously he's panicked and worried about John and how much time, you know, has passed. But he also mentions that he blames himself for not looking at the camera and for not, like, realizing that, like, time had passed. And, like, for letting John go in. So I think a lot of it is that he is feeling like he, you know, let someone down. And I think he let someone down sort of in his field of work, right? Because he had been doing science stuff and he had been, like, testing it out. And he said it was okay and it wasn't, right? I think my thing is, I mean, I get, like, in, you know, it's hard to place it because, obviously, Rodney's in Atlantis. Like, they're, you know, Rodney and Taylor are on the other planet or whatever. What kind of gives me, like, the bad taste in my mouth is that he says it when they're not there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's my thing. I'm like, okay, like, I feel like it'd be a little different if he just said it, like, in the moment with them there. Right? But I just feel like it adds an extra level of almost, like, betrayal. Right. Especially because then, you know, he comes back to the planet and Taylor's all like, oh, look, I solved this for you. And he's like, oh, thank you. Like, it kind of, it just feels like very two-faced. And if he had said it in front of them, I feel like it would have been like, okay, we maybe could have had a scene, or like he maybe, I could have just apologized right then and there. But because they never hear it, they never get that apology,
right?
And everyone can just move on, and like they forget that he insulted them.
I don't think I have anything to weigh in that hasn't been said yet. I agree. I think it's heat of the moment thing that he's stressed and angry and annoyed, and I don't know, maybe I just hope or I wish that he kind of later when things have calmed down, he kind of thinks back at that and is like, oh, that I shouldn't have said that. And maybe, I don't know if he publicly apologizes, or maybe just like makes a mental note not doing that again, but he does.
Yeah, he took that L for sure. But there were some W's in the episode. Like, I do appreciate the fact that he had admitted that it was actually Zelenka's idea, how they managed to enter the field, which was shocking.
He's giving credit.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. I was so proud. I was like, yes.
And also the fact that he admitted that he couldn't fly the jumper. I feel like he only admitted that because John wasn't there to make fun of him, but he at least said it.
Yes.
Speaking of callback, we also had a sneaky little Cadman mention at the end of this episode.
Yes, we did, with Carson saying that he had a date with Cadman, so he couldn't miss it.
Oh, that completely flew over my head.
I love Rodney's snarky little comment where he was like, yeah, well, we have at least 12 years before you're going to be late for that, so.
He's so funny. And I was going to say, I actually, you know, Carson didn't really do a lot this episode. He was just kind of there for the, you know, for the ride. But I appreciated that he was there. And there's that little moment that had me cracking up. When they're talking in Atlantis and Roddy's like, all right, let's go. And he just has the bag and he just chucks it at Carson. And so Carson just like gets a bag in his hand and he's like, oh, okay. And he like goes with Rodney. Just a very classic Rodney and Carson moment.
What made me kind of laugh also about Carson was when they were about to go into the field and everyone was so ready to go. Like, of course, they were the team, like Rodney, Taylor, and Ronan, but also Elizabeth was so ready to go, and Carson as well. He was like, oh, maybe he's injured. So yeah, everybody just was ready to set out to rescue John.
I also really love that part where the invisible beast is coming and they all like sort of step together as one unit.
Iconic.
With all like their weapons raised. Oh, that was awesome.
Especially, iconic.
Yeah, especially after an episode where like John was feeling so abandoned, to have them all like standing in a line together was really great.
You know when a headcanon becomes so strong that you forget it's not canon?
Yeah.
I have that here when I appreciated that Rodney and Carson kind of stepped in front of Elizabeth to protect her from the monster. But then I was also, I feel like this is what Tori talks a lot about, that Elizabeth wouldn't want to become a liability. And that she would have taken, like, either self-defense lessons, maybe even some, like, she would learn to handle a gun, so for emergencies like this, that she wouldn't just stand there. So it was like, oh, it's cute that they are protecting her, but I wish that she was also protecting herself a little bit. But maybe it's also just like the diplomat in her that she's like going into situations only armed with her words. But still, I was like, maybe not like a gun, but maybe a knife or something. But just give her something to.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a cute little moment, but I was like, okay. I was like, Rodney and Chris are not defending anyone. I'm like, so come on. Like, let's be so real. Like,
yeah.
Have Elizabeth as well. Like, have all three of them, like, be coming together with their little guns and being, like, terrified or something, right? Like, yeah. And I did want to say, too, Elizabeth, I was giving her a little bit of a side eye this episode, though. She was a little too excited about this ancient stuff, and I was like,
uh-oh.
Damn it. I was like, no. She was so excited about the ancient stuff and like just reading out the translation and just to go in. She was like, let's go. And I was like, why?
Wah, yeah, wah. I know.
Elizabeth, wake up.
We'll see. I think we'll have to wait till next season for her to have a sort of revelation.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
Does she ever?
That's what I was going to say. I was like, I don't even remember, though, if she really does. Like, she might just be like, oh, okay, anyways, and just, like, move on.
Because her storyline is with the replicators.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And in my head, kind of, she, like, she ascends, and then she realizes that the ancients are shit, and then she descends and is happy again as a human.
Fair.
Yep, I like that.
I think it's even, like, it's canon in the books or something.
Oh, shit.
But it's something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think she ascends in the books and then descends or something. You know, we got, I think it was in our first season, we got a fan fiction written for us with, like, Storm Chaser.
Oh, yeah!
John, and
yes.
It was so funny because in this episode he mentions storms and he's like, oh, have you never had a storm here? And he was really excited about, like, thunderstorms and thunder and lightning and all that stuff. I was like, Storm Chaser, John?
There we go.
Canon?
Canon, yes. I think so.
It's also a nice little, just a little tidbit of information. We never really get John talking about his childhood. So interesting that he was just like, yeah, I used to, did he say he liked it or was he scared? I don't know. Either way, he just mentioned something about storms as a kid. And I was like, oh, as a kid? I was like, you never bring that up.
Yeah, we got a little crumb of Shepherd lore. For a silly thing, I thought Ronan looked very cool trying to knife fight the invisible beast, even though he couldn't see it, because he always looks cool.
With his sword, too.
Yeah, he yanked out his sword. I was like, yeah! It's like, sword count!
Yes.
Same.
He would never, like, use it enough. Like, he could pull it out every episode, and I would be like, it's not enough. I need more.
More.
Also, last silly thing, I wanted to ask you guys how you felt about the John Shepherd beard. Yay or nay?
Sexy. Yes.
Yes.
Immediate yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah! Yeah. Alright, we're all in agreement.
Same. Yeah.
Consensus. Hot.
Yeah. Should have brought the depression beard back in season 5.
Hell yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's so silly to me because I feel like he doesn't follow regs for his hair. So, like, why would you follow it for your facial hair? But anyway.
Oh, he just lets his hair be flopping all over the place. But scruff is where he draws the line. Okay.
Make it make sense.
Also, it was so funny how, like, he was like, I've been here for 2 days, and his whole freaking, like, the beard was out. I was like...
And then it never grew another millimeter.
Yeah.
It just stopped.
I was like, okay, what kind of, like, ancient shaving devices do they have over there? I was like, because I need some of that. I was like, because that shit must be hidden. So, back to me for the behind the scenes. And so this episode was directed by Neil Fearnley, and this is his first and last episode that he directed for Atlantis.
Oh!
So thank you, I guess.
I think he did a good job.
For your service. Yeah, I think so. I really liked the shots of Shepherd in the cave. Like the aerial shot, even though it was just like black nothingness.
And the story was, of course, written by Brad Wright, and it was also penned by a Mr. Joe Flanagan.
What?
Yes, 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 yes.
Damn.
And this is one of two episodes that he helped create, this one. And he also did the season 4 episode where his dad passes away.
Outcast,
yes. So Rodney called Ronan Conan, which is amazing foresight by the writers, because Jason Momoa did end up playing Conan the Barbarian in a film.
Oh my gosh, no freaking way. The irony.
How funny. Would have been perfect if Rachel ended up playing Xena. But it's okay. One for two.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Xena reboot with Rachel Luttrell when?
Amazing. So this is actually the first episode of Atlantis not to feature a Stargate.
What?
Ooh. That is so funny.
I didn't even realize.
So this episode has been sort of, I wouldn't say criticized, but a lot of people bring up there are a lot of similarities to a lot of other media. It's a pretty popular type of story for this genre of television. But, you know, there's a story similar, like SG-1, and in Deep Space Nine, and in TNG, there's an episode similar to this. So I wouldn't say it's like ripping anything off, but I do think it's just a pretty popular, like, kind of sci-fi story for, like, one member to be stuck in a simulation or something and the other team trying to get them out. And so that's been brought up a lot. So, unfortunately, Joe wanted to write this episode himself.
Oh.
But he was too busy. So that's why he only gets the story credit. But this is also where we start to see a lot of infamously bitter words exchanged between Joe and the writing team. Some of that good old Joe shade comes out. So if you have a few quotes here. So he goes, and I quote, "I really had an idea for a man who would be king. It was me and McKay discovering CPMs and becoming greedy and kind of drunk with power. And you thought that'd make for a great episode. And I got the standard reply that is when you always pitch in a story, which is, oh, we did that in SG-1, Joe. Episode 157, haven't you seen it?"
Oh.
Oof. And then he goes, So we had to come up with an episode that obviously hadn't been done, which is very difficult because Stargate has been on the air for a few thousand years.
I mean, true.
He kind of got their ass with that. He kind of really gagged them.
So what I'm hearing is that it's okay for the writers to do it, but not for Joe to do it when they rip off SG-1.
Literally, I was going to say, because the amount of stories like we've already talked about that have been pretty similar to SG-1, and for some reason they were like, no, you can't do it. I mean, I will say, this episode, the idea got turned into the game.
Oh.
So eventually he did get, you know, that type of storyline. But I do think it's interesting that they were like, we did that in SG-1, Joe. Episode 157, haven't you seen it? That's actually really crazy to say to, like, your main lead. To, like, constantly shooting down story ideas and being like, we already did that.
Yes. Like, expecting that he saw everything. Like, I think it's funny. Or, like, I like it when fans of a show done work of on the show. But I think it shouldn't be, like, if there would be a new show, I would kind of, like, I think it would be cool if people saw the old stuff, but it's not a prerequisite to, like, have watched everything.
No.
Actors approach jobs and roles differently.
Especially when it's like, it's like a spinoff. Like, I get for, like, Ben Browder, for example, he watched every single episode of SG-1. He said, I want to see the show for what it is, warts and all. So he watched every single terrible episode. all the good episodes, obviously, too. And so I get why he wanted to do that, because he's stepping into, like, basically, like, you know, one of the lead roles, right?
Yeah.
But for Joe, it's another show. It's supposed to have a different vibe. It's supposed to have a different feeling. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they expected him to have, like, watched every episode.
It might have even been detrimental for him to have seen SG-1 in case, you know, makes things kind of stale if it's always the same.
Yeah, especially because in the beginning, obviously, and to this day, people are still saying, like, oh, like, you know, there's comparisons between Jack and John, right? So if he had watched SG-1 maybe and he had, like, you know, unfortunately gotten already, like, an impression of RDA's Jack, like, maybe that could have impacted his performance, like, negatively or whatever. Anyways, he also went on to say that he did create the general idea for this episode. So he said, you know, we're John is stuck on a planet with a different ratio. And, you know, he's got a beard and everything. And he mentioned, like, explicitly, I've become the sort of de facto sheriff, which I think is really interesting. Interesting.
Okay.
Last thing I was going to mention, though, were so the other languages. The titles in the other languages are really interesting. So in Hungarian, we have Enlightenment.
Oh.
And then in German, Ash, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's Revelation.
Okay.
Hold on, I gotta...
Yeah, check.
She's fact-checking.
Yeah. I think it's... It could be just this. Isn't Revelation kind of a synonym to Epiphany?
True.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty close. And then the interesting one, though, is the French one. It's a word, it's two words that I don't know how to pronounce, so I'm not going to say them, but they're in Latin, and it means time is running out.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. I like that, with the whole, like, because he's in the time thing, and, like, time is moving faster. Yeah.
I like that it's in Latin, too. Very, like, I feel like it kind of ties the episode in a very nice way.
Also.
Very ancient of them. And now, we're going to pass it over to Tor for the stacked fic corner that we're all very excited about.
It was so hard to narrow down the list for this week, guys. Like, I had a difficult time. But I think I chose three fics that really encapsulate how I felt the episode portrayed John. And the team as well. So the first one I chose was Anukshuk by Murren. And basically, a mission gone south isolates Rodney and John from the rest of the team. Forced to search for an ancient outpost, they struggle to keep each other alive until the time their kidnappers prepare to sacrifice the one and purify the other. So this is a fic that I read multiple times every winter. It's set on an ice planet, which I know we always say, like, oh, they should do that. So they did that in this fic. But it's just one of my favorites, like the world building, the atmosphere, the mood. It's great. It's really plotty and emotionally charged and excellent. It has a lot to do with, John's feelings towards Ascension, which we get a lot of in this episode, as well as exploring that idea of, like, maybe doing the self-sacrifice thing a little too much and being a little too ready to do that, while on the flip side feeling, like, very alone. So I don't want to spoil anything by talking too much about the fic, but just know that it's really good. It's, like, longer than a novel. So... It's you're in for a wild ride when you read it. And although things seem quite dire during the fic, I promise it has a happy ending, a very nice ending. Another fun fic that I like that sort of deals with Shepherd in isolation is Visiting Hours by Lily Said. And this fic is not actually hosted on our typical AO3. It's found on the author's website. So I have a link to that. It's actually on the web archive because the website was taken down, I believe. But anyways, I have a working link, so don't fear. Basically, John gets put in a prison under a mountain on an alien planet in the interest of avoiding conflict. And so Rodney is nominated to deliver Atlantis's well wishes and supplies, etc., to him once a week while they try to figure out how to break him out of the prison. And basically he just gets like a front row seat to John's Cam in Unending-esque breakdown, where he's very like isolated and alone and with his thoughts a little bit too much. So yeah, so it's another fic that explores that sort of abandonment feelings, sort of Shepherd in isolation idea. And finally, we have one of my other all-time favorite fics ever, Games of Chance by X-Parrot. This is a gen fic. Basically, what happens is Shepherd is sacrificed by wraith worshippers to be, like, basically a runner or a wraith prisoner. And Rodney and the team had to figure out how to find him, like, what coordinates he's at, and, like, how to rescue him, and how best to launch a rescue. And this fic has always stood out to me because it is such, it's written like an episode of Atlantis. Like, you could think, like, it was ripped from a script. Like, it's just so series accurate. But also, Rodney and Ronan's relationship in this fic is just everything I ever wanted to see on the actual show. Like, them working together to fight to get Shepherd back is just, like, really emotional and so them at the same time. I don't know. It's just really good. Please read it. Even if you don't read genfic, like, you should read it. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. These are such good recommendations.
Yeah.
Well, be sure to check out all of our links and description. We'll link all the fics that Tor recommended down below. And we'll also have links to our personal social media so you can check out what we're doing throughout the week. And we also have links, of course, to our Jumping Puddles so you can keep up with new episodes whenever they drop. So yeah, be sure to check that out. And thanks for hanging out with us today.
Bye!
Bye!
All right, you clowns, listen up. I don't often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.